Shopping for a Kluger? Visit three great Toyota locations today. Berwick, Pakenham and Cranbourne Toyota.
Kogan Mobile. Get started for just $4.90 for 30 days. KoganMobile.com.au/radio.
Dwayne's World with Dwayne Russell.
Channel 9 commentator Todd Woodbridge about to join me. Andrew Westacott, Australian Formula 1 Grand Prix CEO, also later this hour. Alex in Perth is held during the news. So, Alex, I really appreciate that. Thanks for joining me.
G'day, Dwayne. You commentate the NBL and you do a very, very good job. You clearly have an understanding of the game. Did you play yourself?
As a young player, yeah, absolutely, Alex. Played a lot of cricket and a lot of basketball over summer. And I couldn't get the jumping straight up, being the verticality part of basketball. I was bigger than a lot of the other kids, but I kept getting fouled out because I couldn't quite get the verticality in my head, given I was pretty much a footballer who just jumped straight at the ball, which often was on an angle. So no, didn't continue much, Alex, but thanks for your thoughts.
With respect to getting an umpire or a referee on the show to explain, for example, the difference between a charge and a block, in the Adelaide-Perth game, there were a couple of instances where a charge was called and then a block was called, yet I would have called them the other way around. And I've been following basketball for 30 years with my kids playing at a pretty high level and have also refed themselves. And they're also confused in terms of what constitutes a charge and what constitutes a block in the NBL.
Alex, it's great to be able to work with guys like Andrew Gaze and Corey Homicide Williams, Peter Hooley, and Co. Liam Santa Maria, the whole team at Fox or ESPN, if you like, that bring us the NBL, because I get to work with them and ask them these questions. I mean, staying in front, moving your feet, did you establish that ground, that particular position before the player with the ball got to that position? But they argue about the grey area of it. They get their thoughts and they're in complete opposition to the referee's thoughts. So it's a bit like football, Alex, in that it's one of the big grey areas of basketball. And that's why, you know, it's not necessarily hard and fast, even though the rule might tell you it's hard and fast. I think I've lost you there. But, yeah, it's essentially establishing that ground first, staying ahead, moving your feet and making sure that you're always in that position, essentially, before the ball carrier gets there. Continue to take your calls shortly, by the way. 1-300-736-736 is the number if you'd like to join me for Midday Madness. But I'm lucky enough to be joined by Channel 9's number one commentator, Todd Woodbridge, who's been good enough to give us a few minutes of his time after a big night of broadcasting on Channel 9's broadcast of the Australian Open last night. And if you're unaware, if you're young and you're listening to this show, you might not be aware that Todd Woodbridge is actually a 16-time Grand Slam champion. He was a semi-finalist as a singles player at Wimbledon. So if we reckon Kyrgios is good, Todd Woodbridge's record is still better singles-wise than Nick Kyrgios's singles record. And by the way, in that Wimbledon semi, he lost to Pete Sampras, the eventual winner of that Wimbledon, and a man that a lot of people think was the greatest of all time before Roger Federer came along. Anyway, enough of the intro. Todd Woodbridge is on the line. Welcome to you, Todd. Great to have you on.
Hey, g'day, Dwayne. Thanks for that. Yeah, it's nice. I don't know if I'm the number one. I mean, I feel like I lead the number one in Jim Courier, but it's a nice combo to be working in. Throw in Leighton Hewitt in the team last night, and there's some experience in the booth, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear your thoughts, because last night, and we've been arguing about it and taking calls on this show for months and years about Nick Kyrgios, the show, the entertainment versus the pure tennis, and we got both ends of the spectrum last night. We got the computer, we got the robot, Daniil Medvedev, who plays the game at a level, an emotionless level, which is so unbelievably admirable. You've got to admire him and take your hat off to him. But at the same time, yeah, I'm sure as a commentator, you were pretty excited about the circus that you're going to get to commentate on last night.
Yeah. Look, we know the one thing we do know is that when Nick comes on, people tune in. And I've got a group chat of golf mates that I'm in, and they were, you know, bantering away all through the match, and some are going, oh, this guy's a goose, I can't stand watching him. The other guy is going, oh, it's box office, what are you talking about? And that's exactly how he polarizes. I think your comment about Medvedev being the computerized, he wasn't always like that, though, Dwayne. He's had his issues. He's been in biffo with Tsitsipas, with the umpire, had to get him apart. He's thrown coins and got fined at Wimbledon for trying to con an umpire or saying, do I have to pay you to get the right call? He's been disqualified at a US Open. He had the crowd against him at a US Open brutally a few years back, and it actually turned his career. He was very much like a Nick Kyrgios, but has found a way to go to these levels that we saw him last night, where his emotions didn't get in the way of playing tennis. And this is the one thing that when we watch Nick play, you go, it is brilliant. What he produced last night is quite incredible, given the amount of tennis that he's played over the last 2 years. It shows you what he can do. But what he isn't able to do is to go to the next levels mentally and say, I'm going to put all of the other stuff aside and become the greatest tennis player I can be. And if he did that, and we had a bit of the show and a bit of that intensity that Medvedev brings, it would be amazing to see what he could produce and how many tournaments he might be able to win. But until he does that, Dwayne, he isn't going to be going very often through to the second week of a major.
So you and I are old school, where once upon a time the Australian sporting tradition was you gave it 100%. You threw everything you possibly had at your skill set to try and get the best out of yourself. And if you didn't do that, people would whack you for not making the best of your ability. But it is 2022 when we tend to encourage people to be who they are. So should we forget that tradition and admire Nick for, well, he's not going to burn out this way. He's not going to, you know, get upset to the point that he's trying to live up to everyone else's expectations. He looks like he's probably going to enjoy tennis and make a fair bit of money doing it.
Yeah, I think you've got to let the person. Darren Cale, who was in the booth with me for the first match that we did when he beat Liam Brody, I asked Darren, how would you coach him? Because Darren's been one of the best in the world, coached three world number ones and the Grand Slam champions. And he said, look, I have to let him be the person that he is. If I can get 40 minutes out of him at his best, great. If I can get an hour, 40, great. I wouldn't have him play too much practice tennis. I'd have him play his basketball, and I'd keep him in a happy place to get out there. And I think that's a good way of looking about how to coach individually. But I think, and I wonder what might be for Nick at the end of his career, or maybe 5 or 10 years after, he looks back and he goes, oh, geez, I wish I'd have just done that little bit more. That'll be the question for him. We can surmise all we like. I know I can look back at mine and go, well, look, there's nothing else I could have done. You know, maybe I wish I'd won that match and might have changed something, but I didn't have much more to give. I do think that this era of kids, though, that come along, because they live their life in a 24-hour social media news cycle, it's all about the now. And so it's very hard to put in the yards that are needed to get to where they really want to be, because there's too much focus on what's happening at this present moment and what I look like, how many people saw my clip today, where am I, you know, what's my social post going to be tomorrow. There isn't the focus on what they need to do. And this is just not Nick. This is all kids, you know, that are out there. And sometimes, you know, I'm happy when I look back and I go, you know what, I went to Europe and I still had to write letters home, and I don't feel that old, you know. And I had to guts it out. I wasn't able to call mum and dad. I was allowed one call a week on a reverse charge, and you had to dig in and look at yourself hard, and you had to say, do I want to do this or not? And it wasn't easy, and that made you tougher and it made you better.
Yeah, we could talk about this and Nick Kyrgios for an hour, but I know I've only got you for 20 minutes. You've got a heap of commitments. So let's move on and talk about Ash Barty, because a lot of people on the text are saying, hey, don't forget Ash. Let's talk about Ash. So let's give Ash her due time. She is a sensation to watch, and she is a dream as a person and a great role model.
Yeah, absolutely she is. You know, what's interesting with Ash, so last night we had a huge ratings night with Nick. We had 1.6. Tuned in. That was the highest total at one point with his match, and an average of 1.2 million. So they're awesome numbers. When Ash won Wimbledon, she brought in over 2 million. And so, you know, she's as big a star at the right moment as what Nick is, and they couldn't be at the other end of the spectrum. And, you know, I think in sport, you need contrast. And we've certainly got that between the two that people like to watch here in Australia. But if you want to talk about great tennis, well, what she's bringing at the moment is terrific. She's got to take on Camilla Giorgi tonight. And the Italian's pretty dangerous for her, really big ball striker. But what Ash brings is this contrast of wonderful touch, slice, inventive tennis that breaks all of these other women down very quickly. And look, she's in good form. you've got to think, I'm so used to Dwayne and Jared being there together.
Yeah, exactly. For those who don't know, Todd was always great to us on the 3RW Sports Day program with Jared and I. It's great to have you back on this program, my little show, Todd.
Sorry, Dwayne. look, I reckon when we get to the round of 16, you've got to think that the women's final is almost being played between Osaka and Barty. And that's going to be, you know, a big match like last night's was. But, you know, a lot of people thought Ash was going to be a flash in the pan at world number one, and that's turning out to be quite the contrary. She's starting to notch up numbers and records that the greats of the game. And I say, like, you know, she won her first two matches, dropped three games. Well, that's in the category of Steffi Graf and Martina Hingis. They're the only other two that have done that at an Australian Open. So, yeah, she's so likeable. She does it the way you and I grew up thinking you had to do it, but it's refreshing at the same time to see it that way.
What's going to happen in the future, Todd? We're seeing the end of the Federer era, where Rafael Nadal might win this tournament and he might win a Grand Slam or two still. But we're seeing a whole change of the guard in the men's, and in some ways with Serena not playing in the women's.
Yeah, well, look, you know, people said, you know, Serena, things are going to be different. The US Open had an unbelievable tournament, Raducanu and Fernandez, two teenagers just popping their head up, and it was a great story. So new people come along. There's a young kid playing today, third match on Rod Laver Arena, named Carlos Alcaraz from Spain, a teenager. He plays Matteo Berrettini from Italy. Watch that one if you get a chance this afternoon, because Alcaraz is the next one coming along. So we talk about Medvedev and Zverev right now. He's the one that in 3 or 4 or 5 years' time we're going to be talking about with the chance to win if he hasn't won one already. You know, he's touted as the next Rafa, which, ironically, if you were to come along and have won a third of the tournaments of Rafa, you'll be in the Hall of Fame very comfortably. But he's one of those charges that you want to look at. Also, Jannik Sinner from Italy. Italy's got this big surge of players at the moment, which is quite extraordinary. But Jannik Sinner, he's another one that, you know, from the men's side, you look at and you go, okay, there's the new story. So it keeps moving. Sometimes we look and go, oh, tennis won't survive without Roger. It will. He hasn't been at the Australian Open for a couple of years now. And we're still having good tournaments and plenty of interest.
I'm sure you're sick of talking about the last 6 months and the Novak Djokovic affair with the Australian Open. So let me ask you the next step in the Novak Djokovic story. Do you think he'll play in some other Grand Slams the remainder of this year? Will he change his thoughts on vaccination?
Well, I think he might have to, and, you know, that'll be a very big personal decision for him. But already off the back of what happened here in Australia, the French Open at Roland Garros, the French ministry have said that you cannot play if you're not vaccinated. So that wasn't firm until he was sent home from Australia. And so he could miss Roland Garros if he doesn't go get vaccinated. So he could lose the first two of this year. And that could change the course of, you know, what we thought was going to be tennis history. So he has a lot to have to think about. You know, I'm sure that you saw his sponsor, Lacoste, came out and said, we're going to basically review what's happened. So all of the consequences and the dominoes are starting to fall in various ways that I don't think he foresaw. And, you know, I just really hope that he makes a decision that gets him back out on court and it dismisses what's happened here. But what has happened makes it tough for him to be put in that same category as Roger and Rafa.
Craig Tiley probably got a few things wrong in the last few months, Todd, but I think he's done so much good for the tennis, the sport of tennis in this country, and this fantastic tournament that we've got. Like, I had a chat to Craig Tiley a couple of hours ago for a while off air. So, you know, I won't call him a friend, but I've known Craig Tiley for a while, as you would have, Todd. How do you see the way it's all been handled and unfolded?
Well, no one won, that's for sure. All the parties involved, and you can include the governments, Novak, TA, tennis, no one won. And that's really sad, I think, the way it played out. I think Craig has had his hands tied by what the governments were doing. And I did say to some people, like, you've got to go back and understand that this started in September and October, when it was just over 50% of the men's and women's tour were vaccinated. So Craig had to start building a program and working with the governments on how we're going to get this tournament up to get the best players in the world to showcase it as a Grand Slam and also Melbourne as its host city. And that kept changing almost weekly. So we've seen leaks of letters, but can you imagine the mountain of correspondence that was going back and forth since that date? And there's a lot of people pointing fingers and calling for everything, but you've got two different political parties running a state and a federal government, and they're all, you know, coming towards elections and various things like that. And everybody was looking at their own agenda and trying to work out what was going to work and trying to look after people's health. And it was an extraordinary time. And it just, I'm, you know, disappointed that it didn't work out the right way it should. And many of your listeners go, well, what is the right way? I don't have the answer for that. I'm glad that we've got to a point that we're able to focus on the match like we had last night, and that the tennis is starting to be the story.
Has the tournament's reputation been damaged at all?
Oh, I don't know if it's been damaged. Certainly been talked about and gained a lot of international attention. You know what will happen? I think by the end of the tournament, you know, we crown two new champions, and we will be able to talk about what they did on the court. And, you know, I think the Australian Open, you know, it'll be here. We're not going to lose the tournament. There was talk of that. That's not going to happen. And I just hope next year, Dwayne, we can get to a point. We had the massive fires, if you remember.
Yep.
We then went into a COVID year last year. Now we've had COVID and the immigration Djokovic issues. Gee, it'd be good to get to 2023 and just come in with just big tennis stories and focus on that. Because I tell you what, the administration of TA have had to deal with some really difficult things the last 3 years.
Yeah, some things change. Some things will never stay the same, Todd. My last question to you is, your on-court demeanour, your respectful style, the best out of the ability, and playing for Australia was part of the things that we remember Todd Woodbridge for. Does it break your heart a bit seeing what's happening with Davis Cup?
Yes, it does. It was interesting. Medvedev last night came to do his interview, and he goes, you know, this felt more like Davis Cup than a normal Grand Slam, because he was playing Nick at home with a parochial crowd. And that's what we've lost at Davis Cup. We've had nothing that, when we have it now, that is anything like what it was before. But, you know, the thing that I'm disappointed about for Davis Cup is it was a great tool for encouraging and developing young players, the same as what the Billie Jean King Cup is for the women, because there's nothing like national representation. You put yourself on the line even further than you do when you're just out there as an individual. And, you know, the ITF, clearly sold out to be able to make money and put something in the coffers, sold their event. They don't have the property anymore. They don't have control of it. And until they get control of that back and can look at what they need to be able to do to get the best players wanting to play without having to fill their pockets with large amounts of cash, and actually understanding that to grow the game in countries, you need to have that parochial Davis Cup environment where the crowds can get behind their players, their teams, like we have done in Australia. You know, we've played in Mildura, we've played in Darwin, we've played in Cairns, and we've played at Melbourne Park. You take it to the people and they get to feel a part of it, and that helps grow the game. And right now what the ITF have done, we can't grow the game in Australia, and nor can any other country around the world. Next year, the finals are going to be in Doha. How many people are going to travel there to watch it? So we'll watch it play out, I hope, and that we get it back somewhere to near what it used to be, but it's going to take a while.
I thank you immensely, Todd. Really appreciate you taking some time to have a chat to me, and keep on keeping on. You're doing a great job on Channel 9, so we can't wait to see you tonight.
Beauty. Thanks, Dwayne. Always a pleasure.
Todd Woodbridge joining us. A reminder, all the key matches broadcast all day on Channel 9 and 9GEM. As well, while every point and every match across the entire tournament is available to stream free on Nine Now. So you can catch it all with Todd Woodbridge and the entire Channel 9 team. Stick around, plenty still to come. Read a few of your texts out after the break as well. 0433 98 11 16. The text number for Temper, T-E-M-P-U-R, mattresses and pillows like no other.